offenders that sell to the federal government will have to certify they aren't violating 14 different federal labor laws in order to receive future government contracts. President Barack Obama signs an executive order today creating another set of compliance requirements for more than 24,000 companies. Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller is here with details and analysis of the president's executive order. What do contractors and agencies have to do now as a result of this EO today?
So it requires prime and subcontractors, and I think that's key here, subcontractors, to report to the government if they've violated one of those 14 different labor laws in the last 3 years. Now, among the laws the vendors must report on are anything from the Fair Labor Standards Act to the National Labor Relations Act to the Davis-Bacon Act to the Service Contract Act to the Civil Rights Act. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
There's a multiple act play here going on. Then contracting officers, so this is now for the government folks, they're going to have to use that information as part of their research process to determine whether the company is worthy of a federal contract. Now, GSA will create a database where all this information lives so contracting officers can find it very easily. Now, I very much simplified and what this EO says, and we're going to have a big link to it on federalnewsradio.com that where you can find out all the details and read all the pages to it. But what it comes down to is these are rules and regulations that the vendors already have to follow, but they're not necessarily there for contracting officers and people who make decisions to find information about these contractors. So what President Obama said during the signing of the EO today was over the last few years, his administration has taken steps to make the contracting process smarter. This is a part of the smarter contracting effort to reduce the amount of money. But Obama says people who award contracts don't always have the information they need to make sure the contracts go to responsible companies. And this EO is ensuring that contracting officers have that right information and that vendors are living up to the letter of the law. Now, this order, this latest one, is one of several from the administration trying to use the power of government contracting to make change in society. Eric Crucius is a partner with the Center Law Group.
I think it's on a larger scale impact-wise. I mean, I think the gay and lesbian one that came out recently was very narrowly tailored. I thought it was very well written to have a minimal impact on contractors and it pursued a goal that I think most people share. On the other hand, you have the 10-10 minimum wage one, which came out and included very vague language about who this would apply to, and the regulations have not helped clear that up. This one's probably right along with that one as far as having a maximum impact on contractors, and I think this one probably has more of an impact on contractors because the reality of the situation is that a lot of contractors undergo DOL audits and similar kinds of investigations, and the costs for those investigations to a company are very high, and this will only add to the cost.
Now, Crucius and others say the White House is using the power of the pen because of the dysfunction of Congress, and because, let's be honest here, there's a broad political aspect to all of these EOs. I mean, listen, the Democrats are in the White House. They support, you know, the labor unions and the labor groups in the U.S., and I think this is part of that has to be considered part of the reason.
Why did President Obama feel that he had to do this if the laws are already in place? And, I mean, it essentially just says you just have to show us you're obeying laws that already exist is what it sounds like.
Correctly. And in fact, President Obama made it clear during his speech today that the vast majority of these federal contractors do not violate these labor laws, or if they do, they admit it and they correct the problems. But he says there have been too many instances where companies violate these laws and they still get government contracts. David Madland is a managing director of the economic policy at the Center for American Progress. CAP is a big supporter of this EO.
There's been growing research by the GAO, by the Senate Health Committee, showing a major problem with companies, government contractors, violating basic wage and hour and OSHA laws and continuing to get new government contracts without any additional scrutiny. You know, about one-third of the biggest violators of basic workplace laws get government contracts, according to the research by GAO and the Senate Health Committee.
Now, the GA report Madeline refers to is from a 2010 analysis that found that the 15 contractors they reviewed violated labor laws but still received more than $6 billion in contracts. Now, additionally, Senator Tom Harkin built on that GAO report and found that 49 contractors were responsible for 58 of the 200 largest enforcement actions resulting from violations in federal labor laws between 2007 and 2012. He says almost 30% of the companies receiving the highest penalties or payback award, back pay awards for violations of the federal labor laws are federal contractors. So it's not so much that there's this huge problem, but I think there is this growing concern about whether the money Congress appropriates and agencies award are going to companies that follow the law. Madeline says that this evidence that companies who violate the labor laws also tend to cut corners in the products and services they provide. So these are all reasons why the EO is needed, in both his opinion, the labor union's opinion, as well as members of Congress.
All right. I think I have an idea, but I'm going to ask anyway. What does industry think of this, and what do the labor groups think of this?
Yeah, surprisingly, the reaction is about as mixed as you can get.
Right? Yeah, really.
Labor groups and others like CAP believe that EO is a very good thing. And the United Steelworkers, for example, says in a release that the EO shows that people are more important than profits.
Yes.
So, of course, that's going to come from that side. Contractor groups are concerned about several different of the new compliance requirements and how the EO eventually will be put into the federal acquisition regulations. Now, Trey Hotchkins is the Senior Vice President for Public Sector at the Information Technology Alliance for Public Sector.
The kinds of things that we have questions, of course, the devil will always be in the details. There's going to be a regulatory process. There'll be some guidance that'll be issued by the Department of Labor establishing what the expectations are for compliance, and then there will be a FAR Council activity to actually create a clause that'll go into contracts for compliance. So some of the things that I see as challenging for compliance, even if a company has a stellar record, there's a flow-down requirement. And so a company that is building a weapons platform is going to be expected to ask a set of questions and compile compliance records about all their suppliers and subcontractors. That's a challenging and a very significant paperwork exercise for a company. And at the end of the day, it increases the price the taxpayer's paying.
Now, Hotchkins says he hopes that during this rulemaking process that the FAR Council and the Labor Department will go through, they're going to rely on actually existing databases and not make contractors duplicate information collection efforts. Because a lot of this stuff is already being reported in some ways to the Labor Department. So if they can, as he says, create some kind of dashboard or information collection. Now, the Professional Services Council is less positive than ITAPS. In a release, it says Obama continues to micromanage government contractors, and the EO evaluates enforcement over education, punishment over remediation, and confusion over clarity.
Wow.
Now, I also caught up with Mary Beth Bosco. She's a partner with the law firm Holland & Knight. She says there are things vendors need to do to prepare to meet the EO's requirements.
First thing you need to do is look at what your company does and how many of these laws are going to affect your company. The second thing you're going to have to look at is what systems do I have in place already to track these types of violations, and how do I make them consistent across the company, because you also want to avoid the situation where one facility in, you know, Arizona doesn't report things up the chain, but a facility in Maryland does. And so then you've got sort of internal inconsistencies within your own corporation that will really come back and haunt you.
Now, Bosco says vendors also have to ensure training is in place, not only to find and fix these problems, but report them up a chain. I mean, one of the concerns about this, Francis, is if you're a big company, and let's pick on a big company, Boeing, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, you can name any of them, they're international companies. So if a violation happens in, I don't know, let's say Timbuktu, right, will that get reported up the chain, and then could they be held liable for not knowing that there was a violation, but in the fact is they were doing everything the right way, except for they ended up having a violation. Now, this could also open up another avenue for False Claims Act lawsuits if a vendor reports to the government that it has no violations, but again, what officials don't know about it. What does that mean? Could they be sued? Now, Bosco says the EO also could open the door for more and different kinds of bid protests. Now, these are all real concerns. Now, it's all going to depend on how it comes out in these final FAR regulations. But, you know, think about a vendor loses a contract, an RFP proposal. They ask, they look at the vendor who won and say, oh, well, they violated the Civil Rights Act, or they violated the Fair Standards Labor Act.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have worn the contract because we didn't violate them at all. All of a sudden, GAO is now going to be facing all these bid protests. Now, one other piece of this I think is worth mentioning is the impact on small businesses. That's going to cost them to be compliant, and a lot of small businesses work with large businesses as subcontractors. So the flow down requirements is another kind of unanswered question. What kind of challenge that will be for them to meet these goals.
That was the item I wanted to ask about next, because as I went through this and looked at the executive order briefly today, it doesn't appear that there are any waivers or grandfathering or accounts for companies under this size or any of that. This is or it isn't is pretty much what this one looks like.
Now, they are doing a slow roll in terms of implementation. Mm-hmm. It's going to be clauses for new contracts, and then it will be clauses for existing contracts when they come up for option years or renewals. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to all happen at once. But you're right. This is going to affect a ton of contractors. That's why I think Trey Hodgkin told me it's something like 24,000 contractors.
As you were coming into the studio, this popped in my inbox from the National Treasury Employees Union, President Colleen Kelly saying this order will provide federal agencies with more guidance on how to consider a variety of labor violations when awarding contracts. So it sounds like NTEU sees some criteria there for managing the kind of thing that you were talking about a moment ago.
And I think that's always been there, but the information has not always been available to the contracting officers. And from people who support this, that's the biggest change.